Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Thursday, June 18th, and yesterday was my brother's birthday. If you listened to yesterday's show, you might have heard me wish him. And later that day, I gave him a call to wish him directly, during which he told me, like, how many people were calling him and how many texts he was getting. You know, which is normal and fun to get on your birthday, but it got me asking the question, why do we celebrate birthdays the way that we do? I mean, billions of people every year on the specific calendar date that they were born, they'll do things like gather a group of friends, they'll light a small candle on top of the cake, sing a song in unison, and then blow out the candles while secretly making a wish. I mean, when you describe it like that, it sounds insane, right? And it is. But it's also one of the oldest and most universal rituals in human civilization. And the history of how we got here involves Egyptian pharaohs, Greek moon goddesses, evil spirits, the Christian church banning the whole thing, and a copyright lawsuit over the Happy Birthday song that a corporation used to collect $2 million a year for 80 years until a filmmaker with a $1,500 grievance took them to court and won. For most of human history, ordinary people did not celebrate their birthdays. Most people didn't even know what day they were born. Record keeping was inconsistent, calendars varied between civilizations, and the concept of tracking an individual's annual anniversary simply wasn't a priority when most of your energy went towards not starving. The earliest recorded birthday celebrations, dating to around 3000 BC, were in ancient Egypt, and they weren't for regular people. When a pharaoh was crowned, the Egyptians considered that the moment the pharaoh was born as a god. The celebration wasn't about the person. It was about the divine transformation. Pharaohs got birthdays because they were gods. Everyone else didn't. The ancient Greeks adopted the idea and added the element that most of us would recognize, the cake and the candles. They baked moon-shaped cakes for Artemis, the goddess of the moon, and placed lit candles on the top to make the cakes glow like the moonlight. The candles weren't decorative, they were actually offerings. The Greeks believed that the smoke from the candles carried prayers up to the gods, which is, if you think about it, exactly what we still do today when we tell a kid to blow out the candles and make a wish. The ritual survived for over 2,000 years. The religious meaning didn't. The Romans were the first civilization to celebrate birthdays for actual humans, not just gods. Roman men who reached 50 were honored with feasts and gatherings, though women's birthdays weren't celebrated until roughly the 12th century. Romans also started the tradition of giving birthday gifts to bring good luck. But even in Rome, the practice was limited to citizens with means. If you were poor or enslaved, nobody was throwing you a party. And then Christianity arrived and shut the whole thing down. Early Christians considered birthday celebrations pagan rituals, which they literally were, borrowed from Egyptians, Greek, and Roman traditions that honored non-Christian gods. The only two birthday celebrations mentioned in the Bible are for the Pharaoh in the book of Genesis and King Herod in the book of Matthew. Both are villains. The message was clear. Celebrating your birthday was something bad people did. This view held for several centuries until around the 4th century, when Christians started celebrating the birth of Jesus as Christmas, which softened the anti-birthday stance enough for the practice to slowly re-enter European culture. Now, the birthday party as we know it started in Germany in the late 1700s with a tradition called Kinderfest, which translates to children's festival. German families would place candles on a cake, one for each year of the child's life, plus an extra candle representing the year ahead, which they called the light of life. The child would blow out the candles while making a wish, and the belief was that the smoke would carry the wish up to heaven. If you blew them all out in one breath, the wish would come true. Sound familiar? That's because almost nothing about the modern birthday party has changed since 1790 Germany. We're running the same rituals 230 years later. But here's a detail that changes how you see the whole tradition. In 18th century Germany, roughly 1 in 3 children died before the age of 5. Disease, malnutrition, complications that modern medicine handles routinely were death sentences. A birthday wasn't just a celebration, it was a relief. Your child survived another year. The extra candle, the light of life, wasn't optimism. It was hope in a world where hope frequently didn't pay off. When you watch a three-year-old blow out candles today, you're watching a ritual that was invented by parents who weren't sure that they'd get to light them again next year. We kept the tradition, but we forgot what it cost. For a long time, birthday cakes were a luxury. Sugar, butter, and fine flour were expensive, and only wealthy families could actually afford them. It wasn't until the Industrial Revolution made ingredients cheaper and more widely available that birthday cakes became accessible to the middle class. In America, most middle-class families didn't celebrate birthdays regularly until somewhere between 1860 and 1880. The practice that feels ancient and universal has actually been common for only about 150 years. And then there's the birthday song. In 1893, two sisters from Louisville, Kentucky, Patty and Mildred Hill, wrote a classroom tune called "Good Morning to All" for Patty's kindergarten class. The melody was simple enough for small children to sing, and it spread quickly through schools across the country. At some point, someone replaced "Good Morning" with "Happy Birthday," and the new lyrics caught on so widely that nobody could trace who actually wrote them. In 1935, the Summey Company registered a copyright for the song. In 1988, Warner and Chapel Music bought the copyright for $25 million and began aggressively collecting licensing fees from anyone who used the song commercially. Film and television productions paid up to $10,000 per use. Restaurants paid thousands annually for the right to have servers sing it to their customers. The Warner and Chapel Music Company, which is now part of the Warner Music Group, was collecting roughly $2 million a year for a four-line song that had been sung freely at kitchen tables for decades. Not sure if you've noticed this, but it's also why every chain restaurant in America developed its own weird alternative birthday song. They weren't being creative, they were avoiding royalties. And in 2013, a documentary filmmaker named Jennifer Nelson was making a film about the song's history and was told she'd have to pay $1,500 to include it. So, she sued. Her legal team discovered that the 1935 copyright registration was flawed. It covered a specific piano arrangement, not the lyrics themselves. The lyrics had been published without copyright notice as early as 1912, which, under the law of the time, meant that they had entered the public domain. In 2015, a federal judge ruled that the Warner Chapel Company had never actually fully owned the rights to the words, so the company agreed to pay back $14 million in improperly collected licensing fees. The most recognized song in the English language had been held hostage by a corporation for nearly 80 years, and a filmmaker with the $1,500 grievance set it free. The part I keep thinking about is how durable this ritual is. The specific elements, cake, candles, song, wish, gathering of people who care about you, have survived across thousands of years and dozens of cultures, even though the religious meaning behind each element is long gone. Nobody blowing out candles in 2026 thinks they're sending prayers to Artemis. Nobody cutting a birthday cake is thinking about 18th century German Kinderfest. The rituals outlived the reason that they were invented, and that's maybe the most interesting thing about birthdays. You blew out candles last year, but you didn't think about Artemis. You didn't think about 18th century child morality. You didn't think about smoke carrying prayers to heaven, right? You just kind of did it, because that's what you do on your birthday, the same way your parents did, and their parents did, stretching back through centuries of people who each forgot a little more of the original meaning and kept the ritual anyway. The fact that it still works, that it still feels like something, even completely stripped of its origins, suggests that the rituals are serving a purpose that goes beyond what any one culture intended when they invented it. The developmental psychology research on birthdays suggests that what birthdays actually do, especially for children, is establish a sense of individual identity and social belonging at the same time. You are the center of attention for one day. People gather specifically for you. They sing a song with your name in it, and that experience tells a child, you matter, you're seen, and these people chose to be here for you. In cultures where individual identity is emphasized, like the United States, birthdays are an enormous celebration. In cultures where group identity is more valued, birthday traditions look different. For example, in South Korea, the emphasis on your birthday is actually on your mother, who labored to bring you into the world. You eat seaweed soup, the same dish that she ate for recovery after giving birth. The celebration isn't about you. It's about gratitude for the person who made your existence possible. I'm not gonna lie, I actually kind of love that. Anyway, now let's get to the birthday party. The birthday party industry in the United States alone is estimated at over $12 billion, which is a remarkable number for a ritual that didn't exist for common people 150 years ago, and was actively banned by the largest religion on Earth for centuries before that. We've taken a pagan ritual that honored gods, stripped it of its religious meaning, added a copyright-protected song, commercialized the cake, and turned it into one of the most reliable consumer spending events on the calendar. That is the most American thing I've ever heard. And somehow, even with all of that, when someone walks into a room and everyone starts singing and there's a cake with your name on it, it still works. You still feel something. All eyes on you. So this week or weekend, if it's someone's birthday and you're going out to celebrate with them, here's what you should think about. For most of human history, nobody celebrated birthdays. The earliest celebration were for Egyptian pharaohs becoming gods, not for regular people. The Greek gods added candles on cakes as offerings to the moon goddess Artemis. Early Christians banned the practice because the only birthdays in the Bible belonged to villains. Modern birthday parties started in 1700s Germany with Kinderfest, where children blew out candles and made wishes carried to heaven by the smoke. Middle-class Americans didn't commonly celebrate birthdays until the 1860s. The Happy Birthday song was written in 1893 as a kindergarten tune, copyrighted in 1935, and held hostage by Warner Chappell Music for 80 years at $2 million a year in royalties, until a filmmaker sued and a federal judge set it free in 2015. Every alternative or weird birthday song at a chain restaurant exists because the real one used to cost money. And somehow, a pagan ritual that was banned, commercialized, and copyrighted still makes you feel something when the room starts singing your name. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.